For the moment, let's call it a hypothetical, but what if network broadcast television, the most powerful communications force in the history of mankind, the opiate of the masses, the home of desperate housewives, were to disappear?
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
Human sacrifice. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Okay, it would be disruptive. Now, what if TV as we know it were replaced by something really, really cool?
Meet George Jetson.
Let's say it's 2020. George's job at Spacely Sprockets is gone because digits are the new widgets. Over-the-air network TV is gone, too, along with program schedules, affiliate stations, and Jimmy Kimmel's career. Jane, Judy, and Elroy get their entertainment and their news any way they wish. TV, phone, camera, laptop, game console, MP3 player. Satellite radio is a $4 billion 8-track tape player, stored on a high shelf in the garage, pushed aside by podcasting, which is free. The Super Bowl has survived as the number one pay-per-view event. Survivor hasn't. You can still see any episode of CSI ever, but not on any advertiser's dime unless you choose for the viewing costs to be subsidized by ads. Yes, sirree, by George, it's a brave and exciting new world. But it's in the future, which doesn't come till later. So what if the old model collapsed before the bright, bold, Jetsonian future is ready to pick up the pieces? What would it mean for the media business? What would it mean for advertisers? What would it mean for us, TV viewers, who have more or less gotten used to plopping onto the couch to watch, say, Fear Factor? Here's what it would mean. It would mean radical changes in the economy, the culture, and the society itself. And they wouldn't be easy to swallow.
Don't quit. Just swallow it.
And by the way, it's happening right now. We are heading all of us into a historically turbulent moment in the history of media with the very real risk of disruption on a mass scale. Call it the chaos scenario.
I truly believe, and I know many of you do, that today's marketing model is broken.
Okay, maybe that statement didn't sound all that terrifying, except that the speaker was Jim Stengel, global marketing officer of Procter & Gamble, who was telling ad agencies that network television isn't giving P&G its money's worth. When the world's biggest advertiser, and therefore the world's biggest underwriter of media content, is looking elsewhere to spend its $5.5 billion a year, that makes Madison Avenue and Hollywood shudder.
I think it's an inevitable kind of slow collapse of the entire mass media advertising market.
J.D. Lasica is president of the Social Media Group Consultancy and author of Darknet, Remixing the Future of Entertainment.
What we're seeing is that not only does television have to reinvent itself from the content point of view, they have to reinvent itself as an advertising medium.
The trends are undeniable. According to Nielsen, the network audience has eroded an average of 2% a year for a decade, while the U.S. population increased by 30 million. In that span, the advertiser cost of reaching consumers has nearly tripled, presuming, that is, that those consumers, armed with remote controls and now TiVo, are actually watching the commercials, which research shows they usually are not. These trends are not going to reverse, and the advertisers who pay all the bills are already beginning to flee. 10 years ago, American Express spent 80% of its marketing budget on television. Now it spends less than 30%. Then there's the sword of Damocles called cost. The reality TV fad has enabled networks to cast for hits with cheap programming, but the public is fickle. When the reality craze finally fizzles, like the westerns and spy shows of yore, and the advertising pipers have fled, who will pay for all the expensive new tunes? No wonder network executives speak of selling video-on-demand reruns over broadband. No wonder Rupert Murdoch's News Corp retained McKinsey & Company earlier this year to figure out how to transition to this internet thing, which is something like nailing plywood to the windows after the hurricane makes landfall. No wonder Viacom chairman Sumner Redstone announced plans to spin off CBS and the company's other broadcast properties lest they drain the rest of Viacom's profitability. So, yeah, the collapse is underway. But wait, what's that coming? Just over the hill.
We're standing outside the Sam Adams Brewery.
Was terrifying.
I couldn't get into Risty through the front door, so now I'm coming in through the back.
Okay, we're recording.
Recording? Okay, so today, hon, we really left the office very early, got in the car, and we're up north.
Those are excerpts of video logs, or vlogs, produced by individuals and digitally posted on a website called unmediated.org. It's one of several sites devoted to generating media content from ordinary citizens. In the end, says co-founder Drazen Pontic, mass media will be overthrown by micromedia.
All of that is happening. It's a huge proliferation in the last 2 years. It's a huge audience, and we will have zillions of people broadcasting for the audience of 10.
Or more than 10. Last month, a little girl named Dylan Verdi posted her iMovie on her dad's webpage. Another blogger got wind of it and dubbed the 11-year-old the world's youngest vlogger. Within 24 hours, the video had been downloaded 2,000 times. During the run-up to the last election, JibJab.com repeatedly scored millions of views for its satirical animations. And who can forget the public flogging of Tucker Carlson?
Now, this is theater. I mean, it's obvious. How old are you?
35.
And you wear a bow tie.
Yeah, I do.
So this is...
No, I know.
That episode got what? 400,000 viewers maybe on big old powerful CNN?
Jeff Jarvis blogs at BuzzMachine.com.
Well, that same segment was copied onto the internet where it got at least 5 million views. So what's more powerful, the network CNN owns or the network that no one owns? So now suddenly the distribution is exploded. Now on the internet, we can all swim in the same pool. You and I can create content to swim in the same pool next to the content created by, Universal or Disney.
And it is a beautiful thing. The total democratization of media, combined with ultra-targeted ads consumers actually opt to see. We, the people, cease to be demographics. We become individuals again.
Hey, it's the Don and Drew Show for March 28th, 2005. I'm Don Maselli.
And I'm Drew Domkus. It's just barely the 28th. We got 5 minutes to midnight.
What are you doing up?
I don't know.
A young Wisconsin couple can produce a radio show for pennies and deliver it direct to your iPod, a so-called podcast ultimately competing for audience with, say, On the Media, which costs a comparative fortune. We podcast our show, too, which makes us either enlightened participants in the New World Order or buggy whip manufacturers delivering our goods by truck. But we are not blind, and we can see the text messaging on the wall. We can see that the time Americans spend online has doubled in the past 5 years. We can see that broadband penetration has zoomed from 8% to 56%. We can see that a brave new world of zillion-channel digital democracy awaits us all. If only the brave new world were ready. But at the moment, it is a collection of technologies and ideas and vacant lot bandwidth, a digital playground for visionaries and 11-year-old girls, a place short on capital resources, technological infrastructure, and rules. Never mind dogs and cats living together. Think Yugoslavia.
There is no way to make transition from the previous regime into anything that is different or new or whatever without a period of chaos.
Unmediated.org's Drazen Pontic, formerly of Belgrade's freedom-fighting radio station B92, knows whereof he speaks. He eyewitnessed the ultimate fragmentation of a country, first by war and tyranny, then in the year 2000 by the ascension of democracy. Democracy empowered individuals, a new model. 5 years later, unemployment is at Great Depression levels, poverty is the norm, and the prime minister assassinated by the mob. Because, Pontic understands, in societies and economies,
new paradigm is not going to be established overnight.
There are simply too many obstacles. Consider just a few. Though broadband penetration has soared to nearly 60%, that's still a long way from universal. Secondly, pending legislation aimed at movie piracy could outlaw the peer-to-peer software that makes citizen video possible. And third, despite the agitation of Procter & Gamble and a few others, says Chris Sharon of Forrester Research, certain forces of the status quo will cling to habit and vested interest.
Namely networks and ad agencies who have a lot of stake in the buying and selling of advertising going on as it has for years. So they're not going to be very fast to move to these new forms of media.
That's why a vast multinational company like American Express finds itself experimenting with sponsored concerts and goofy long-form web ads featuring Jerry Seinfeld and Superman. The company no longer sees the value in loading up on network ad spots, but there's no ready supply of other new media marketing opportunities to replace them. Yet, when I asked Chief Marketing Officer John Hayes why so many of his colleagues are still sitting on their hands, he offered some non-responsive answer about the consumer being the boss.
Would you stop being diplomatic for 5 seconds? Is the industry ready for the new world order, or is it not?
Well, certain parts of it are, and certain parts aren't.
And what will happen to those who are not?
Well, as in any industry, those who are unprepared for change will, you know, obviously suffer the consequences.
And most likely, so will you, because the chaos scenario isn't limited to the economic fortunes of Viacom and J. Walter Thompson and Procter & Gamble. If you like to collapse on the sofa and just veg out for an hour of, say, Alias, never mind Nightline, if you don't like to surf for content, if you're in the 44% of Americans without a high-speed connection, you could be in for a long, tough slog. Om Malik, who writes for Business 2.0, imagines a netcasting universe offering an endless variety of lousy options.
You can put a lot of bad, you know, video clips you shoot with your camera phone on the web, but how many people want to watch that?
For the record, there's at least one other doomsday scenario worth considering. It comes from David Poltrek, head of research for CBS, who happens to believe that over-the-air network television will thrive for the foreseeable future. However, he warns, woe betide those who would dismantle it, because what is at stake is nothing less than the American way of life.
And if, in fact, that current system deteriorates to the point that advertisers and marketers abandon it, I don't see anything that's going to replace it, and the entire marketing infrastructure of the country and the economy is going to be diminished. And that's a lot bigger problem than just a network television problem.
We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yes. That's a powerful new force.
Yep. Like Pappy Daniel in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, CBS is enthusiastically embracing 20th century technology. The problem is that the micro-communicators aren't much interested in preserving that version of the American way. They are steadfastly fomenting their revolution, already in progress, which, in the long run, will benefit George Jetson, Procter & Gamble, and everybody else. In the words of Rashad Dabakawala, president of the media buying firm Starcom IP,
those who will come to destroy TV will eventually save it.
In the meantime, strap on those gravity shoes, hop on the treadmill, and try to keep your footing, because this voyage to the future is going to be a very rough ride.